This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on 104.1 FM KMOX. Still getting used to saying that, but it makes me happy every time I say it. Every Tuesday at 4 p.m., if you are new to the show, I have to remember that we are looking to double our listenership on FM, so a lot of people will either remember the DGS from 97.1, but you didn't follow me over, and you're just hearing us now. Some of you are hearing us for the first time. So just sort of Seinfeld for radio. You know, it's kind of the show about everything and nothing. We're about to do the Think Tank, which we do every Tuesday at 4 p.m., where we get some of our friends from the political world, usually on opposite sides of the aisle. But who was it? It was Neil Gelman last night, who was talking the show up to another potential client and saying, there's a big comment. Dave doesn't care if you're right or left as long as you're smart and fair. I think that's a good... a good way to put the Think Tank, right? Today we have two of our favorites. We have St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman. We have Jeff Rainford, who ran the city for decades. Good or bad, right?
Yeah, good or bad. I think it was good and bad.
What was that like? We were just talking about Francis. Francis and I go all the way back to when I graduated from law school. I thought he was a very good mayor. I thought he did a very good job, the two of you. But what was that era like for you?
For us, we were always broke. So there were two stock market crashes while we were in office that decimated our three public employee pension funds.
Oh man!
So we were always broke, always cutting the budget, and cutting the budget is never a popular thing. So it was a very, very hard job. I mean, the current mayor in the last 4 years, I think, had $500 million in ARPA money and $200 million in RAMS money, and you saw how hard that was.
Yeah.
Well, we had the opposite problem, and it was very, very difficult. But I'll tell you what I tell people is, it's the hardest, most aggravating thing I've ever done. It was the most rewarding thing I've ever done.
That's
so I really appreciate that I had the opportunity.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, we when I was at East West Gateway, I had to work with Francis a lot, and we got along well. When I first got elected, I went to Judge Simon, Paul Simon. I said, "Hey, I don't know Francis that well." Anyway, he put us in touch with each other and spoke, told me I could trust him, and told Francis he could trust me, and we worked together pretty well, I think.
By the way, Francis is alive. He just turned 70. He's in very good health.
Good,
so
yeah.
This is not meant to be an obit. He's doing great.
And I saw him last Friday. He was at he's on the State Highway Commission now.
Yeah.
And he was at the groundbreaking for the third lane of I-70 out in Wentzville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember it was at Guns N' Roses. I don't remember what year it was, but he wanted me to meet his dad. But to do that, I had to go through several layers of sleighs to get to his dad. I kept thinking it was his dad. He's like, no, that's Uncle Nicky. You don't need, don't worry about Nicky. Oh, geez, I'm worried about all these sleighs.
Yeah.
Well, he had 11 brothers and sisters, and his dad, though, was one of the greatest people I've ever met. So his dad, and it was one of the reasons Francis was so successful as a politician, his dad in the 60s, when it was not a thing, would hire African-Americans to his restaurant at a time when you think things might be kind of segregated today. They were really segregated in the 60s, and he was one of the first white restaurateurs who regularly hired African-Americans, and a lot of older African-American voters remembered that and rewarded Francis and voted for him, you know, simply because his dad was such a great guy.
Yeah, that's very cool. Let's start out with the big story of the day, this chat leak with the members of the intelligence community and members of the defense community, and I'm not going to go through the story again. We did it once already. I'm sure you know the story. My take, very simply, is much like Joe Biden's performance at the debate. We all see it. We've all hit reply all. We may not know the ins and outs of what's classified and what's not, but we know that the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic shouldn't be on a tech stream talking about an attack in Yemen. And what I find most offensive is what I consider to be absolute gaslighting by the administration. If they just admitted, you don't have to admit everything, it's national security. We made a screw up. We learned our lesson. We're going to do things differently. I'm not even talking about it on the show today.
Well, I don't know what the administration has said, but I know several Republican senators have said just that. Hey, it was a mistake. Let's make sure it never happens again. We're lucky that it didn't have negative consequences this time. So that's all you could do. I tell you, we had a conference call today, Zoom, you know, on the screen and everything, and I sat down and they had some people on the screen, and then they just had initials for some people. Right, I never would have in the past, but I said, "Okay, who's that?
Who's TJ?
And who's that? Let's make sure I know. I want to know everybody who's on this Zoom call."
I think a lot of people probably had that experience today.
Yeah.
Let's check that text stream before we do anything.
Yeah, there's multiple things wrong with it. First of all, as you said, Pete Hegseth criticized the reporter, and the reporter might be a good reporter, bad reporters with The Atlantic. He might be against the administration, for the administration, but they're the ones who put him on the text thing. He didn't put himself on the text thing. So to say he's on the text thing, everything he reports is true, but nobody should believe it because he's a bad guy, is kind of ridiculous for the defense secretary to say. The second part of it that a lot of people may not be thinking about is in government, I believe at all layers, federal government, state government, and when I was in city government, you are not allowed to avoid public scrutiny by using private servers. I believe Hillary Clinton got in trouble for this.
Yeah.
Private servers, private text messaging things. They're not supposed to be, you know, doing the government's business that way, whether it's classified or not. Now, I assume, I don't know, that when it comes to national intelligence, they have some very, very classified ways to communicate with each other. I would think that would actually be more secure than using a publicly available application or app, but whether there is or isn't, you're not supposed to hide government business by using your own email server, your own texting or some other tech service. So to me, it looks like the amateur hour. Now, it is a new administration. The president's not new, but all the people on the text were new. So maybe it's going to be a rookie year. They'll learn from it and move on.
Well, I don't think we can blame the reporter. Gotcha journalism's here. Been here for a long time, like it or not. Personally, I don't like it, the important thing is now for people to learn a lesson from it.
So this next topic is related, but it's more esoteric. So when I was a lawyer, I understood the system that I'm going up against Jeff. You're our judge. I'm going to push as hard as I can. He's going to push as hard as he can. We're going to spin it within the bounds of ethics, and you're going to make a decision, or the jury will. I understand that adversarial construction. I understand that there's a similar one in politics, that you're going to push against Democrats, and you're going to push against Republicans, and the people are going to make their choices. I get that. But over the course of my life, we've gone from what I considered sort of playing fair, you know, not biting each other down in the trenches of a football game, to only biting each other. It just seems that now the hair trigger is for me to just go off on Steve Elman. Let me tell you something about Steve Elman. This guy he wouldn't know the truth if it hit him in the face. And I worry that, one, overall, it's just bad for the country. And two, that the younger generations who don't remember what it was like in the 70s, 80s, 90s, just accept that this is the way things go. And I'm really concerned about that for the future of my kids.
Well, you know, some elected officials make a decent salary. And I don't feel sorry for them when they have to put up with that. The people I feel sorry for are the ones on the school boards. And sometimes, you know, on the boards of the aldermen and councils in these small cities. I mean, these are people who could be home with their kids and their family and are making money at their business. Instead, they get into politics and they serve on these boards and they have to sit there and listen to that. And one of these days, the good people are going to just say the heck with it And the people now who are out there screaming at them are going to be the ones sitting on the boards. And I'm not sure they're going to be as good policymakers.
Yeah, I think there's two problems with it. One is ordinary people don't want to be part of it. So you find ordinary people not wanting to be in Congress, and the kind of people who want to be in Congress are the president and the people who crave attention, who are, you know, just have, I don't know what happened. They weren't allowed to suck their thumbs as kids, or nobody came to their birthday parties. But for whatever reason, they crave attention. And people who actually would want to do public service and not get into these crazy Twitter wars and all these other things, or be in protests or be protested against, they're just not going to do it. And so it's going to get, on both the left and the right, it's going to get crazier and crazier. And the second part of it is having a rational conversation about policy no longer happens because it's considered to be boring. I was listening to a podcast this morning with a Democratic pollster who, and he was asked, you know, the Democrats are not stupid. They knew the election was about egg prices. Why didn't they talk about egg prices? Well, the answer is because people wanted, you know, when their base and the press wanted to hear them throwing bombs at how Trump was going to undermine democracy, even though most voters wanted to hear about egg prices. Well, egg prices are boring. Saying that Trump is going to be the end of democracy as we know it is not. And so what we're promoting here through mostly social media is that only the bombastic, led by our president, but not just him, also Bernie Sanders on the other side, only the bombastic are being heard. And anybody who wants to talk about what we're really going to do about egg prices, which is probably a very dull economic conversation, nobody wants to hear that, even though egg prices are the thing that people are unhappy about.
Yeah, well said. Steve, back to your point about like school boards and even some congressmen coming back home and doing town halls and they're just getting shouted down. Do you view this as, well, this is democracy at work and the people are standing up for themselves and damn it, if they want to yell at their representative, they get to do it? Or do you see it as something darker, something that we should...
Well, at first I blame COVID, and we experienced that during COVID because our county council was the only place people could go and complain. All the school board meetings were closed or on closed circuit TV.
Yeah.
The legislature had closed up and gone home. You know, people were coming in to our meetings. It's the only place you could go. Get on TV and say what you thought was wrong. And the fact is, 80% of the time, they were complaining to us about things we had absolutely no control over. And yeah, they were very frustrated, and it was a tough time. It has gotten better, knock on wood.
Mm-hmm.
But it has gotten better in the last year or so. But that was the time when I first started thinking, boy, you know, would I want my kids to go into politics if this is the way it's going to be the next 30, 40 years?
Yeah. Going to take a break here and come back with more from Steve Ellman and Jeff Rainford. Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX 423, the think tank with Steve Ellman and Jeff Rainford. So we're talking a lot today about politics, and we talked about this story earlier. We had a nice little debate about it. Basically, I'm sure you guys have heard it by now, but Kara Spencer had a campaign event, and Tashara Jones showed up with security and kind of refused to leave and work the room. And Kara came out later with, "I'm shocked and appalled," and like... So Wheel said, "How dare you? This is terrible. It's an awful look. It doesn't make you look tough. It makes you look desperate." Rachel thought it was kind of a power move, kind of a boss move. You know, it's like, hey, if you got the guts to show up at your opponent's thing, then, you know, you should get the credit for it. How's it hit you?
Weird. I thought she just looked weird standing in the corner and stuff. I think the context would be different if it was a 50-50 race or if the mayor was a favorite. Then you would look like you're making a power move. When you've lost the what I call the primary by 30 points, I think you just look weird or desperate or something bad. But that just comes down to when winners win, they whatever they do looks great. You know this in sports.
So
and
true.
When they lose, they do the same thing and it looks bad. She's losing and losing bad, so it looks really bad.
Don't throw a Hail Mary when you're ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Good point.
Well, yeah. You just sit on the ball.
Well, you mentioned she showed up with her security detail. How many people were on it?
I only saw the one guy.
This one?
Yeah, I only saw the one guy with the badge on his belt.
Isn't that
yeah.
one of the complaints? That,
that
while,
was one of the
while
ads.
They were
yeah,
defunding the police, they were increasing her security
yep, it was.
Detail.
It was.
So if I had shown up, I certainly would not have shown up with my security detail.
Would you have shown up, maybe?
No.
Well, if there was a 50-50 race, people have done far worse things or far more bold things than that. If it's a, like, you know, the candidates used to have trackers. They would track the other guy, take video of it, like with an intern, take video of the tracker, would take video. And then when the candidate would get all mad and push him, then, you know, that would end up being a thing. But when you're 30 points down, my personal opinion is I would try to lose gracefully at that point and, you know, and be thinking about my next job and things like that. And this is not the way to do that. This is the way to win something where it's neck and neck, it's close, and you're just going to pull out all stops.
Jeff, does it matter that it was a primary instead of a general election?
Well, no, because it's the same two people running again.
At least keep people from punching each other out?
Well, I don't know that we do that. I don't think we do that.
Well, you don't have any Republicans to punch out.
We don't really do that. But I will say this. These two candidates could not dislike each other anymore, whether they were Republican, Democrat, or Democrat. Democrat. These two people do not like each other.
True.
Yeah.
So campaign promises aside, if Kara wins and you have her ear, you say, okay, you made the promises. Great. Congratulations, Madam Mayor. What would you advise her to actually do when the feet hit the ground?
Right away, the feet hit the ground, she has got to restore city services. Now, that is not the only job of the mayor, and maybe at some point it's not even the primary job of the mayor, but as a city resident, crime, potholes, trash, no removal, cutting the grass in parks, having the bathrooms in parks work. Right now, that's the reason that the incumbent is on the road to losing and losing big, is that city services are terrible. So until she does that, she's not going to have credibility to do the bigger things. But once, and this is where Steve comes in, once she gets city services, assuming she does, to where the people of St. Louis either are okay with them or at least are okay with the effort that the city's putting into them, then she needs to start looking at a lot of regional things, which I know Steve is thinking about, things with the county, things with St. Charles County, whether it's the city entering the county as a municipality. Steve is putting together a deal for a regional police training center. The city should become part of that. So the city is not going to be able to dig itself out of this hole on its own. So first she needs to make the city credible. Then she needs to work with her regional partners to make both the city and the regional better.
But see, she not only she has not only not taken care of the city, but she's been more concerned about fixing society than fixing the city. And that's fine. In some ways, that's noble. And, you know, the best example is this thing with, you know, hiring the social workers to go out with the police. OK. And you know, I had no problem with them hiring social workers, but I offered an amendment down at East West Gateway that said before that organization, that new organization could hire a social worker, the city had to hire 10 new policemen. And Megan Green, you know, inquired and said, now, do you think that policemen are 10 times more important than social workers? I said, no, but I think we need 10 times as many policemen as social workers. I said, if I can get your vote, I said, send my amendment back. I sent a new amendment back. I said, hire one policeman for every additional social worker.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get support for that either.
All right.
So think about city first, society later.
Thank you, boys. Appreciate it.
Enjoyed it.